Welcome to the Love Sport Podcast. This is Paul and John. Start of your sporting weekend. We'll cover the AFL, NRL, the NFL draft, everything in between. This is the Love Sport Podcast. And hey, if you're playing sport, you're definitely going to have some dirty boots. Mate, the AFL season, I'm not sure about you. John, welcome to the Love Sport Podcast. It's John and Paul. AFL season for me, you're a Brisbane supporter. I'm a Richmond supporter. I want to make this clear. If Richmond was 5-0 or 6-0 now and Brisbane were 0-6 or whatever they would be, I have not enjoyed some of the style of play. And I think the umpiring, it, for all teams, is the worst I've seen in the longest time. I don't know what's going on there, mate.
Yeah. It's a hard one. I don't want to start on a negative, on a downer, because, like, obviously the Lions are seemingly getting back into the swing of things. I think umpiring's been an issue in the AFL for a couple of years, and I think the main part of that is that I think that they pretend that they give clear directions at the AFL about what's going on. But I actually think they're one of the most lick your finger and put it in the air and see what direction the wind's blowing when it comes to everything.
And then change
officers of a sport I've ever seen.
And then do the opposite. So they'll put their finger in the air, see where the fans are going in, and decide to do the opposite. Yeah. That's what it feels like. And look, I'm not having a go at umpires. I know that sounds like an oxymoron. The rules get changed so often. The pace of the game, their positioning, though, how often you'll see that they're out of position. Maybe they just don't have a feel for the game at the moment as well.
And there's three of them. Nothing more frustrating than somebody who's 100 metres away overruling a guy who's 1 meter off the action.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also think that for a long, long time, they haven't been able to decide when they're going to pay for a tackle. And I think that's always a point of contention. I think that there's some dumb rules. I hate the deliberate out of bounds rule. It's a joke.
Oh, mate, look, I totally agree.
It's just so arbitrary, the times it comes up. And no matter what they do with that or when they give it, somebody's always going to be angry because it is one of the most subjective rules you can possibly come up with.
Well, having played the game for a number of years, I have kicked the ball off the ground in a contest when it's hot. I've kicked the ball off the ground when it's wet. How, unless you're 1 meter away and it's booted out, how a kick off the ground can be called? Here we go. They call it insufficient. They've got around it in a grey area saying it's insufficient attempt to keep it in instead of deliberate out of bounds. That's how they've got around that so they can call anything they want. Because how can you control that ball when you kick it off the ground? How many kick off the grounds get done for, insufficient attempt? It's impossible to keep that ball in when you kick it off the ground.
It is. So I just think you just go back to you do one of two things. Because throw-ins have become not what they used to be either. You either give a free kick, you just say, if it came out last off you like in almost every other sport, and then it goes to the other team.
Yep.
Or you just say, we're sticking to our old rules, which have served the game really well, like for over 120 years. And if it goes out of bounds, unless it's on a full, it's a throw-in. Problem solved.
Well, absolutely. Well, let's get on to some positives then.
I'll tell you something else. If they're trying to speed games up, right? I was watching the other night, like the 15 metres for a pass goes out the window when somebody's trying to close the game out at the end of the game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, we talk about the 30-second rule for goal scoring. I don't have too many problems with that, right? The issue I have is how long they give a player who's taken a mark, who's nowhere near goal, how long they give a player at the moment. It seems to be about 20 seconds. I reckon you have about 5 to 10 seconds. You watch the games, how often someone will take it 70 out. They're never kicking a goal, but they'll have almost a full 30 seconds before they pass it. But, hey, it's Saturday morning. Let's get on to some positives, mate.
You're fired up, mate. You're fired up. I tell you what, was It's you know, making I thought not, you're supposed to be mellowing in your old age.
It's just making me not enjoy the game, though, John. I can't tell you how often I will be watching a game and the umpiring, and I'm not talking about Richmond, I'm talking about any general game I watch, and I'm like, oh my God, these guys have no idea. I can't watch this. I cannot watch a player get spun around 720 degrees, not be called holding the ball, and he gets a handball to someone who's free. Like,
I hate that.
I reckon if you're spun around...
They've had a problem with deciding when a tackle's made and when it's not for a long time. And I actually don't think that they pay anywhere near enough free kicks to people for making great tackles, especially when it's hot.
I think that the problem being with the game is
because
well
that would also clear a lot of congestion as well.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But I think part of what I don't like about it, and it's always been a little bit of the game because I used to do it as a tactic, is players are now waiting for someone else to attack the ball and then tackle them. And it's just, there's something fundamentally wrong there. But look, then you see games like Anzac Day and Anzac Day Eve, 170,000 people to those two games. And Richmond-Melbourne was a cracker for most of the game. And then Collingwood and Essendon was an absolute belter. So you not only got 170,000 people at the games this week, Anzac Day Eve is now fast becoming a must-see game because of the night spectacle. And then the Anzac Day game, those two games, I think those four teams with their crowd numbers and the performance that they're put in, I know Essendon and Collingwood have solidified it, but Richmond Melbourne are fast solidifying that fixture as well. It's just amazing to have almost 200,000 people and that spine-tingling atmosphere before those two games is out of this world. There's nothing like it.
Yeah, well, it doesn't hurt that Melbourne are actually good at the moment.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But, you know, traditionally Richmond and Melbourne still get pretty good crowds. So I think it's that you know, the blue collar and the upper class kind of thing comes into play a little bit there.
Well, that's going to take me to a topic that I do want to broach a little bit later on. But, yeah, so that's interesting because it's all about what role does the home... Yeah, no, I'll come to it. Anyway, go on, keep talking.
Well, let's get into it, mate. Just a little bit of footy there. Port Adelaide have really turned around their season. They beat St Kilda, who I thought were pretty disappointing last night because they got out to a little bit of a lead and stopped doing what they were doing. And all credit to Kenny Hinkley, under so much pressure after the first couple rounds, even though they beat Brisbane, to be 5-2 after seven rounds. That's huge credit. And Horn Francis as well, who... Look, was he a bit of an idiot when he was at North? Probably. Is he under 20 years of age when he was at North? Definitely. And he gets booed like he's the biggest villain ever because he didn't want to be at a struggling club, right? And yes, he was, you know, petulant and all that kind of stuff. But what under 20 in that kind of position, you know, there's not too many who aren't. And he's playing great football for Port and really, really solid win against St Kilda last night. Collingwood doing what they're doing. Melbourne around about the mark. And we're starting to see teams like Brisbane and Geelong and so forth start to come really back into it. And I expect those teams like Geelong and Brisbane and Melbourne to be right up there with Collingwood again. But really great to see a team like St Kilda starting to get those young players coming through, mate. Down the bottom, West Coast and Hawthorn definitely expected. I think North will join them pretty soon. Richmond struggling. They're in a transition year. And the rest around about the mark. I think the biggest disappointment for me, John, is actually Fremantle. They look like they're just regressing at a fastest rate ever.
Well, we're playing them today at the Gabba, and I hope that they keep regressing, to be fair.
Well, look, the Gabba is possibly at the moment the hardest ground to win at. I think that'll be a big, big win. But I think Fremantle will try and make it ugly. I don't think it'll be free-flowing. I think they'll try and keep it tight. And you've just got too much class here. So this is the kind of game, you win that, you're 5-2.
And suddenly the top four is looking wide open again.
I think the top four will be pretty similar to what we've seen the last few years. Those teams, they'll come into it. It's going to be a tight season, though. It really is.
Yeah, I want to take my hat off to Port Adelaide because they poleaxed us in week one. And, I know that you can say what you want about other teams and who they played, but they played us and St Kilda. They played Melbourne as well.
Yeah, and look, I think they
That's a pretty decent draw. That's a pretty hard draw. That's way to get. They haven't had St Kilda's draw.
No, but still, you can only, and we always say this, you can only beat who you can beat. We're starting to see some teams progress. I do think Essendon's on the right track. The Adelaide Crows are definitely on the right track. And they play Collingwood, and that almost becomes a 50-50 game because of Adelaide Oval. It's a very strong crowd. It's a hard ground to play at because most of the ground is covered like a normal ground or, you know, grandstands, but you've got a couple little pockets where the breeze comes through, and I think Adelaide will be hard to beat there. I think it'll be a good game.
No, I think Collingwood are the mentally toughest team in the comp.
Oh,
and I don't think the crowd can actually affect them.
Well, the crowd's going to be, it'll be a big Collingwood crowd there anyway.
Everywhere they go, unless it's at home, they cop abuse. So
yeah. And
it's not like they wouldn't be expecting it.
I think you said it well, though. I don't think we've seen a mentally tougher team in many, many years. They do not care if they're down by 4 or 5 goals. They keep going.
No, they're awesome. Their style of play. It's funny. Their style of play seems to be a bit like rope-a-dope.
It does a bit, but I mean, we've got two Dacos. I can't remember two brothers in many, many years that had such a quick impact on a team. The last two brothers, and you can say the Scott brothers, and I will vehemently disagree with you. The last two brothers that I think really affected a team, like just blew the competition away, has to be all the way back to the 80s and the Cracker brothers.
Yeah, I would say that. Look, the Scott brothers were a very an integral part of a great team, and they certainly knew how to batten down the hatches. But
a bit of tongue in cheek there, mate. I was just taking the mick out of you as a Brizzy fan, mate. But no, look,
we were definitely better when they were both playing. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. But these Dacos brothers. The skill on them, and I know their dad is one of my favourite footballers I ever watched. He was one of those players like Lockett, like Ablett and so forth. You had to go and watch him play. And he did things before. He was doing the check sides. He was doing the dribble goals. No one did them. He was the only player I knew in the comp at that time who did those kind of kicks.
Without a doubt, it's great to see anybody pop out two of their kids playing like that, but I can tell you there's another pair of brothers coming. That's the Ashcroft brothers.
Well, yeah, I mean, having a similar kind of impact. I love the fact he just seems to be in the. I mean, like all good players, Will Ashcroft is in the right place at the right time. He's hard bodied, and look,
he just walked straight into that side, hasn't he? I almost swore. He looks so good.
And there was a lot of Brisbane supporters I knew who said that from the start, that he is going to play round one. I saw highlights don't do anything, but I saw extended highlights of him. I went, wow, this guy is bursting away from packs against the best in the country. He just knows where to be. And that's what the good players do. And look, the Dacos brothers, Ashcroft, do have to say Horn Francis, those kind of guys. It's rare that you get, within a couple of years, ready-made players who are just... They're going to be the mainstays of the comp for years to come. And that's...
I said, Ashcroft's got his younger brother coming through as well, which is really exciting.
What's his name, mate, besides Ashcroft?
Young Ashcroft.
It's good name. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Actually, isn't every second kid these days called Sonny? So maybe he's called Sonny.
Yeah, I think you're right there, actually. I think you're right.
Well, everyone watched The Godfather a few too many times.
I think so, mate. We've got so the Lions taking on the Dockers. I would say that, you know, honestly, it's a 1:45. It's a rare Saturday afternoon game there, mate, at the Gabba.
Indeed, and that's why I'm going.
Oh, fantastic. You should have given me an invite, mate. I would have come up with you.
We only just teed it up on Thursday night, meeting our daughter up there, and then going to go out for dinner with her. We were going for dinner at the German club.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you what, if you're after a hearty meal, the German club outside the Gabba across from the Cricketers Club, fantastic. We're not sponsored by them, by the way.
But wouldn't it be awesome if they got on board with what we're all about?
Well, we are all about the German club.
Yeah, that's right. You know I am.
Oh, I am too. And so's Shawnee, ex-podcaster with us.
Well, Sean... Yeah, good friend of the podcast, Shauna. He can. It's quite funny, anybody out there, but if you've ever been to a as love cricket like we do, and maybe the game is a little bit dull, you can actually spend a good solid afternoon and evening session at the German club and say you still had a great day at the cricket because you didn't even turn up.
And guys, if you are from overseas listening, which I know we've got overseas listeners or interstate, definitely if you're coming up for a game at Brisbane, do go to the German club. You've got outdoor areas. You've got real quality German food. And the beers are like early 2000 prices. They're actually quite good.
Yeah. But, hey, mate, look, I've got a bone to pick with the AFL, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
AFL's 23 Legends list that they put out.
Yeah.
This week. I mean, everybody's lists are lists and all the rest of it and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, for the life of me, were they coming up with a list of 23 legendary players in the AFL? And it's not all just the last 10 years either. And they can put Glenn Jakovich in there, okay, cool, and Shane Mumford and not have Tony Lockett. I just don't understand that. Is that because he's not their kind of guy anymore?
Yeah, I'd say so.
And no, Jason Akermanis, he's not allowed to make any lists anymore, is he?
No. And look, I will say this in defence of Glenn Jakovich. He's the only player I ever saw who almost time and time again blanketed, I've just gone completely blank, the North Melbourne centre-half forward, the legend, Wayne Carey. He's the only player I ever saw who could actually nullify Carey.
I'm not bagging Glenn. I pulled his name, came up just as I was looking at it.
Yeah.
All right. And I'm going, really? Matthew Lloyd? He's not better than... He was better than Tony Lockett.
No.
There's only one player on this list who might be better than Tony Lockett, and that's Wayne Carey.
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah, that's a completely different style players, but I definitely get where you're coming from there. And I think any of those...
Campbell Brown!
No, let's go
Come
back.
Come on!
So what's the actual list called again? Because I did see it yesterday.
AFL's 23 Legends.
Okay, let's bring that up because...
36 of the game's greatest players, two from each club.
Okay, that can't be right. This list can't. I mean, I don't think you can do this list, to be honest. Isn't it for a footy game? Isn't it for AFL Live or something?
It's got the AFL logo on it,
right? Oh, okay. This is an absolute piss take. You've got Kane Corns in there for a start. And this must be players you saw. You know what I think it is, mate? I reckon it's players you've signed off on it because they've got AFL 23 Legends, right, for the game. No, this is, I can tell you now.
Doesn't the AFL Hall of Fame have its own Legends category?
Yeah. This is, mate, this is a mix.
Well, Kane Corns, as last I heard, isn't in there.
No. What this is, it's for the game.
And neither's Heath Short.
So, yeah, no, they're not. This is for the game, right? So I'm going to put it into context. Some of these players, well, I doubt Tony Lockett would sign off on being on a game. So,
David Cloak.
Yeah, I mean, these are players who've signed off to be in the game and probably done it for a cheap price because. I wouldn't have Campbell Brown in the top 250 players. And I think this is a dead joke. This is just for a game, mate. And it shows why.
All right. Well, you settled me down because I don't do much social media anymore. And that came my way. And I was like, that's why I don't do social media. Because look, usually these lists are some idiots list like us, right?
Yeah.
But this looked reasonably official. I'm like, really?
Oh, yeah. It's for the AFL Live game. And so certainly these players would have signed off on it as well, mate. So, yeah, it's for like Xbox and PlayStation 4 and 5 and stuff like that. So I wouldn't take that list in with any grain of kind of truth in there.
All right, then. I just wasted our time. So
no, you did not. No, there's a fair few people arguing about that. So I just wanted to give it a little bit of context. And it's for a game and they probably mix it up every now and again. And also people have to sign off on it. And I know...
Well, the list maker's an idiot.
Well, it's also, did some of the players go, no, I'm not doing it for that money. I don't want to be on that game. You know, that kind of thing.
Okay. Because the 23 number, because of Michael Jordan now, that's the only number in town for people. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I don't really care about that.
I think you're probably right there. But look, I think you made a fair point. And there's been a lot of arguments about it. I just wanted to give it a slightly different context that it could be that that quite a few of the players went, nah, I'm not signing off for that. Or you're not paying me enough. You're not putting my name on that as well. That could certainly come into it. So, you know, just saying.
You did well, man. Good
on. Could be wrong. Sydney take on the Giants in what you would think would be a Sydney win up in a derby there. But Giants do choke down Sydney, so you just never know. And when you've got a Toby Green in any team, you're a chance. So I'm not sure there. Doggies take on the Hawks. The Dogs a big chance to climb up the ladder because the Hawks, they're hit and miss.
Just on that, just on Toby Green. Sorry to cut over you again, but
no,
you would have to think if they were dredging up legendary players from the GWS Giants, Heath Shaw must be on there for that side of it because it couldn't be Collingwood.
No. No,
and then Toby Green surely is the greatest player.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Melbourne take on North, which you would expect tonight will be an absolute drumming at the G. Look, this is what we were talking about with crowds, and I know Melbourne's going well, and North Melbourne are trying.
Well, it'll be interesting now at the Melbourne North game because that's Clarkson going back to Melbourne, yeah?
Yeah, and it's 7:25.
Does that interest anyone?
No. I don't think so.
There you go.
But it's 7:25 at the MCG, a Saturday night, Melbourne and North Melbourne. Oh, the crowd's going to be around 40, I reckon. And that's been generous.
40,000 people going to that.
But it'd be early 40s, I think. What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, I think that sort of early season excitement at North might be going out the window, right?
Yep, exactly. Now, mate, no one's giving Eagles a chance against Carlton at Optus Stadium tonight. But I give them a little bit of a rough chance. I mean, I know Carlton's a far better team, but they've got some injuries and they are playing over in Perth. It could be a danger game for Carlton there. No comment?
Yeah.
Hello? Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I was there, mate. So, Carlton...
Yeah,
but like sort of hit speed bubbles.
We're going to have to get back on track. I couldn't imagine that.
I can imagine.
We've got to hang around when things start to go pear-shaped.
No, look, tomorrow it is there's a couple of good games. There is. There's Essendon and Geelong is a really interesting game because Essendon, you know, after their disappointment on Anzac Day, but Geelong's got a few extra days rest as well. So I think Geelong will be too strong for Essendon tomorrow. But if Essendon win that, you know, they're having a really good start to the year. If they lose it, people will start to doubt them.
Oh, there's a lot to like about the way they play. I mean, I love that big ruckman. He's awesome. What's his name again?
Draper.
With the Mo?
Yeah, and he's Draper. It's Sam Draper, is it?
I think he's fantastic.
Love it. He takes the game on. Just goes for it. You know, he reminds me of a little bit, not the same style of play, but that's get the ball and just, you know, just let yourself free run. It's kind of like what Nick Natanui did for a few years.
Where he does look like that. He's got some, he bobs up like a true ruckman, like all over the field.
And they have this similar style. I mean, not quite. But
arms and knees and elbows and stuff.
Yeah, and when they run, they have their shoulders slightly hunched over and they just, I just really enjoy watching.
Sort of looks like a giraffe running.
I reckon he's
awesome. He's been good for a couple of years.
I was about to say to you, he's one of the players that if Essendon are on, I'm like, whoa, okay, let's see. Kudos to Sam. I'm really enjoying his football. Look, good chance for the Suns, if they're going to be any good, to take on a depleted Richmond team at the G tomorrow afternoon. Oh, sorry, it's actually at Marvel, so there'll be no one there because Richmond supporters can't travel 10 kilometres across town.
Well, that's good news for Stewie too, because that should leave a little bit more space at the pre-game bain-marie.
Oh, well, there's no doubt that, you know, some of the coaches will have things like Gatorade in front of them, and I always wonder why they don't get stuck into it, probably because of the high levels of sugar. But I reckon that's a massive...
That doesn't stop Stewie, mate.
Well, I reckon that's a massive chance for someone like 4-20 just to pile the pies up in front of Stewie. But that's a good advertising. Just pile them up. Get in there.
There was a rumour going around, wasn't there, that he was starting to shed a little couple of kilos with the new year coming and stuff like that. But I can't imagine him any other way these days.
I love Stewie. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to fat shame Stewie. He just represents people like myself who love a pie, who love a bit of coaching. And you know what? He was a bigger man when he played the game. He was always going to be heavier when he left the game. And that's just the way he is. What a beautiful kick that bloke was. One of the best left foot kicks you'll ever see.
But, we got two premierships, didn't we? And one of them was at the cost of our four in a row.
Absolutely. But the guy's just one of the best kicks I've ever seen. I always reckon a left footer who's clean, it just looks nice. But my old man's a left footer, mate. And he actually kicks right as well. But I just loved watching them kick on the left. It's something about it. Hey, if the Suns...
Well, that is good, but it's even better when the guy can do it on his right foot as well. So that's why Acker remains an eternal god in AFL.
Yeah, you are spot on. The ex Leon Cameron from the Dogs, and obviously went up to Richmond and coached at GWS. He could do it both sides of the body as well, and I just love that. You didn't know which foot he was. So look, if the Suns are going to be any good, these are the games they've got a good record against Richmond. These are the games the Suns have got to start winning. They're just so irrelevant at the moment.
Anyway. Well, fingers crossed. It would be nice to see them. Actually, the only reason I'd be going for them to win is because, I need to keep Richmond out of the eight.
Yeah, I'm a Richmond supporter, so there's no way on God's earth I want them to do that. But I'm taking that hat off for a second. If the Suns are going to be relevant, they've got to beat these teams at some point in Melbourne. And they're playing at Marvel, which is a totally different experience to the MCG. Richmond does not have a good record there in recent years. And there won't be the biggest crowd there tomorrow. A 3:20 Sunday, first bounce when Richmond hates Marvel. It'll be a small crowd and a big chance for the Suns there.
Great chance for hardcore fans to get tickets and spread out.
Yeah, good call. Good call. I'm one of those rare people who likes Marvel. When the roof's over, I feel nice and warm. I'm all good. Crows take on Collingwood. And I know you favour Collingwood here, but I think it's a 50-50. I think the Crows the young guys are starting to come through. Good crowd. I think Collingwood will win, but it'll be very close.
How far in front's enough?
Six goals maybe with 10 minutes to go.
Right.
But, some good rounds there. Mate, not sure if you saw any of the NRL, over the last few weeks or anything like that, but South's... hello.
My son's just got up and making himself a shake.
Oh, I love it. That's what our kids do, mate. It's no more Weet-Bix and honey toast. I bought crumpets last night for the kids for brekkie. No one's going near them, but they're all, doing what Connor's doing and... The protein shakes and smoothie shakes and all this kind of stuff.
Give me the gluten-full crumpets, mate, with some butter. I'd rather have that every day.
I'm after this podcast, mate, I'm going to slam into some honey crumpets for sure, mate. So, Eels pump.
You better make sure you get to the toaster before Stewie Jew gets up to your joint if he's heard that news.
Oh, Stewie and I, crumpets and then pies for morning tea. We're done. Yeah. We're on. Eels absolutely pumped. What have to be just, they've got a really loyal crowd, the Knights, and a really loyal supporter base who do show up. But they were disgraceful yesterday. I mean, the early game, and they get done 43-12. And it was a game I thought they were going to be a real chance. But Mitchell Moses will be pretty happy that he's staying at the Eels because he scored a try and he converted all seven attempts as well, mate.
Guthers got a player. Oh, yeah, you've got to feel sorry for the Knights fans because they really are literally you have to say, Parramatta would though be probably the loyalist fan base. I reckon that and South, I'd say that the Knights are in that top three. They're the three.
I'd have the Knights right there, mate, because, they, for me, yeah, I mean,
you can put them number one, but that's not really fair on Parramatta, who travel, have the biggest fan base, and have waited around like seemingly forever for them to be good again.
Yeah, look, no doubt about it. I mean, you could put them all in the mix there, but for the Knights, they've paid one or two players a lot of money. I don't think it's I don't think they're, you know, out of the mix of improving over the next few years. They're not bereft of talent. But, oh, mate, they've paid a lot of money for a couple of players who are underperforming terribly.
I don't think Kalyn Pong is a guy that you want to... You know what? Like, despite the fact that there's arguments in the NRL that fullbacks, like, you know, amongst the most important positions, I just don't see that you can build a... You can rebuild from the bottom up with that.
No, look... Look, yesterday we saw a game where South's new... go into the second game where South's absolutely beat the Broncos convincingly in a really close
game. First half of that game was awesome, mate.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say to you. The first half is really tight, and I thought the Broncos were actually the better team in the first half. Mm. But we saw two of their bench. It was really good coaching because they knew that... that Brisbane were light on with forwards, with injuries and so forth. And they put a couple of big forwards on the bench. Now, those two forwards that were on the bench, between them, 400 metres. Now, I know that's becoming a stat in the NRL, but it's quite a vital one because the reason I bring that up, you go back to the Knights, and I think their most running metres for any of their players is about 196 for the whole year. And yet we had two forwards last night for the Souths get 400 between them. I mean, that says a lot.
It did, and it's fast. They're obviously well-prepared, well-organised, and they've got some fantastic players. Having said that thing about the fullbacks, I'll take my hat off to Latrell Mitchell, who I just thought was playing so well, man.
Didn't he nicely give it to the crowd as well? You know, you could tell the crowd were giving it to him, and instead of being really, you know, arrogant and a dick, I thought he had fun with the crowd. It looked like they were interacting well. When he was giving
really
it to
good.
Them,
yeah, he's. It's hard to dislike him, you know.
Oh, and but that's what I'm saying. Like even giving grief back to the crowd, it seemed really good, well natured, and that's a real sign of how much he's matured. And I just thought he was really calm last night, which bodes well for the Rabbitohs going forward. Especially, you know, they're going to make the finals. But I wanted to touch on one play last night. I'm not sure if you watched a lot. The play that got their second try. Where they loaded up everyone to the left. Mm. And then that was fabulous. Oh, that was, do you know the bit of play I'm talking about?
Yeah, it was good.
And Graham goes through and scores on the right. I mean, that was fabulous coaching.
Yeah, you can really see the South. Yeah, they look very, very good. They've got so many talented players and they're going to be hard to toss out for the premiership, to be fair.
I think their depth in their team as well. When you're talking about, you know, a couple of forwards who come on and make 400 metres and they were on the bench, I think the depth at Souths is really, really good.
And the week before, the way they came back in that game the week before was just, that was outstanding as well because they were dead.
Oh, they definitely
And they've
were.
Got that in, they've got that firepower in them at the back end to just do things. Bring a lot of pressure. They bring a lot of pressure to the right hand side of defenses all the time.
Yeah, they do. And the thing is, they've got four or five options, which the best teams always have. They've got four or five scoring options and play options. And look, you're dead set right about their win previously, beating the Panthers, who looked like they had that game, I thought, wrapped up. To beat the Panthers and then to beat the Broncos up in Brisbane, that's two fabulous performances.
The Broncos are better get used to that because if they're going to pay Payne Haas $15 million to be their banner boy for the next 10 years, they will still never win another premiership in our lifetime.
Well, I think they're still going in the right direction. I mean, today we've got the...
They won't be game. If they pay him all that money.
No, that's right. Today we've got the early game Raiders and the Dolphins. Look, the Dolphins, I know it was a great win last week, but, I mean... The mismanagement on the field and with the coaching of Gold Coast last week, there's no way the Dolphins should come back from 26 down. No way on God's earth.
Well, you know, I haven't made many Facebook updates for a long time. You saw mine last week.
Yeah.
I have to say that of all the top-level coaches in Australia that I can think of, to have as long of a run as he's had, Holbrook at the Titans, with pretty reasonable squad most of the time. And you know they're reasonable because they always get out to a big lead. I think he's had the least amount of scrutiny. I think he's the most underperformed coach to hold a job I've ever seen.
Yeah. It seems to be the bit of the Gold Coast way in sport at the moment, where the coaches kind of slide under the radar. But that you can't give up a 26. It just, I know it's a different sport, John, but God, it reminded me of that Super Bowl, the Falcons and the Pats, where you're like, okay, if you can just hold the ball for a couple sets, put the kicks into the corner, take a bit of the heat off the game, they kicked it to advantage. They were kicking it high, but not long and deep. And the Dolphins players were running onto it. And I was just thinking, surely someone gets a message out, grubber the ball, put pressure on, take a run on the fifth tackle.
Take a dive.
Do something different.
Yeah, that's right. Try and get a penalty. Oh, start a fight. God. Do it anything.
I mean, what do they say? The I'm going to get it wrong, but, you know, they say the definition of insanity is the doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Well,
they were always going to end up getting the record for the biggest comeback because they keep having allowing comebacks on them all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was going to happen, and that's their game plan seems to be they're always ready for the first half. So I don't understand how you can't translate. If you know you've got a problem, get everyone in the room and say, listen, start the way we start, second half, we're going to
new
go
game.
Out.
It's a new game.
New game.
New game.
Do not put the cue in the rack.
No. It's insane. I mean, great comeback, but you shouldn't be able to make that comeback. If the other team has any kind of clue what they're doing, you shouldn't even be able to get back in that game. That's five tries you need to score in a half. No, that's great comeback, but really it's a bad loss for the
Titans. What's embarrassing for the organisation? It really 100%. Is.
Raiders have a chance to get their season back on track. They take on the Dolphins in the early game. I don't know who's going to win that one. I think when you're a new team and you're 8 or 9 rounds in, some of these away games get harder. And it's not easy to win in Canberra. So I could see Canberra winning in a real messy game, but it wouldn't shock you if the Dolphins got up.
I don't think there's any chance the Dolphins are going to make the 8. And I think you're quite right about these away games. They started out with this big hype and yeah, and they've got a great coach and he's got, you know, maybe 10 or 12 excellent players and he can point them in a direction. You start to take injuries, a bit of doubt, you know, you cop a loss here or there. Reminds me of the Broncos in their first year. Like, they were flying. And then they just... You're right. You're quite right. Canberra's a horrible place to travel to and play footy. So, the Raiders...
Just.
Even though it's hard to tip the Raiders.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That's what gives me the worry. I'm not worried, but it gives me the worry about the Raiders is you just can't trust them as a team.
Maybe a really loyal manservant like Jack Whiten might have a big game today for the Raiders.
Yeah, true. Eagles take on the Titans. I think the Seagulls.
I've got to say, hey, on that point, like the NRL, I know I don't blame the players. I actually think that buying and selling system in the NRL is just beyond. It's not even funny.
Having guys
being signed to other clubs in a super hard contact sport like rugby league. What do you expect anyone to do for you once they're leaving?
Ah, exactly right, mate. Look, I totally agree with you. The system is flawed. There's no benefit really to your academy teams anymore. I think I've spoken to you about this before. I think if you're going to have that salary cap, academy players for their first 3 years of their contract, this is just my idea, John, is that the salary cap for the first 3 years for an academy player who's come through your club, I think should be discounted, even 50% off the salary cap for academy players.
Not hard. Like, if we can come up with solutions, I don't understand why they can't.
I mean, look, you're not playing an academy player a lot in their first 2 or 3 years, so maybe it's only 20% of the salary cap. I'm just trying to give an idea because there's no benefit anymore to these clubs having academies, really.
No, and they don't all have them.
No, exactly. But those who do, like the Broncos, all their players go everywhere else. Panthers will absolutely towel up the Tigers tonight. I feel sorry for the Tigers. I think they're in for an absolute pummeling.
Yeah, they're on struggle street, right?
And Panthers losing that game last week. Tell me they're not smarting and looking to really put on points. I could see this being 20 odd, you know, maybe 30 point game.
Do you think Mitchell Moses lies awake at night at the moment going, man, I wish I had stayed at Balmain?
No comment. Warriors take on the Roosters, and this is a game. Look, Warriors having a good season, but are really enjoying the way they're playing. It's at Mount Smart Stadium, so I think the Roosters will lose this to the Warriors, actually, mate.
Yeah, well, it's a big trip, isn't it? Well, they're pretty tight on the ladder. They're both on 10 points. Yeah, Chooks are a good side. You'd have to, if the Warriors are having one of those years where they're playing okay, then they're hard to beat at home. So, but look, I'm not a betting guy, but I would never say, put money on. Guys. I'd never put money on them.
No, we're not betting guys, right? But the Warriors are over $3 at home, in higher on the ladder than the Roosters. I think they're the value bet of the weekend. There you go. We don't even punt. There you go. Dragons take on the Bulldogs, and holy crap, if you want to talk about punting, Dragons are a $1.60 favourite against the Bulldogs. I wouldn't put free money on that game.
Oh, I think there's a lot of money getting around on both sides of that field and a lot of underperforming going on. I kind of think the Dragons showed enough last week in a big game. They probably should have held on and won that match. They had chances.
I agree. I wouldn't imagine
if they play like that, they'll beat the Bulldogs, no drama.
I just wouldn't want to put money on it, that's all. It's one of those games, isn't it? NFL draft was, they really build it up. You know, every year they build up the draft. Football, you know, it's only for about 20-odd weeks of the year. But, geez, they've done a good job, haven't they, the NFL, of keeping their relevancy with the free trade period. We've just seen Lamar Jackson and Jalen Hurts sign mega contracts. And I've got to be honest, I'm so happy for Lamar, but I'm also really happy for Baltimore. But can I be really sentimental, John? Are you going to allow me to be sentimental?
Yeah, go for it, man.
I'm really stoked for the game that Lamar's going to end up being a one-team quarterback. And that's getting rarer, and I'm so bloody happy to see that kind of thing happen.
Well, I'm stoked for the fact because it means the Ravens won't win another Super Bowl in our lifetime.
Yeah, because we know it. Your best modern NFL right now is get a good quarterback in from college, and you've got 3 or 4 years where you basically pay them no money at all, and you build your roster hoping that in the third or fourth year he can deliver some playoff wins, if not a Super Bowl. That's become the modern kind of managerial tactic, don't you think?
It has been. Look, I think there was a lot of pressure on the Ravens organization to keep Lamar Jackson, and I think I'm not sure that it's all football-based. Everybody's always getting record deals. I like Lamar a lot. I think he brings a lot to the table as a QB. Seems like a decent guy, but I wouldn't be mortgaging my house on him. Look, I understand doing it for Patrick Mahomes.
Definitely. But you put Lamar Jackson, I mean, there was talk of him going to the Dolphins at one stage, right?
He can't play there because he can't throw.
Yes. And that's what I was about to say to you, right? Like, I think he can throw, but I don't think it's...
Yeah, but not the level that you have to be able to do in the NFL.
No. The thing is, I do like the fact that he's going to be a one-team quarterback. And for me as well, you know, I'm a card collector and so forth. I got a Lamar Jackson rookie card. And that, you know, and I've put it up on a couple of pages. It's only a PSA 8, if anyone follows. 8 means it's near mint, so it might have a little corner with the tiniest thing you've ever seen on it. But that I was just having a look because I'm never going to sell it. I keep one card of each quarterback kind of thing, so yeah. I'll never sell it. But I was just having a quick look, and it's about a $200 card that when he signed that mega contract went up to about $800-900 within a day or two. If he had signed with someone else, that card actually drops down. It's funny, isn't it? The commodities of football players. I wasn't surprised with the draft either, though, mate. Can I just go back a step? Sorry, I'm all over the place. Jalen Hurts signing that huge contract. If they don't win a Super Bowl in the next year or two, they're in big trouble, Philly, because when you pay your quarterback that much money, you know what it's like with Aaron Rodgers. Once you sign a quarterback on big money, you can't get the weapons in that other clubs can. And so you know, Philly's got a year or two because they've signed a lot of their wide receivers and their defense and everything. They've got them all signed for the next couple of years. It's kind of quarter bowl or bust in the next 2 years for Philly.
Right now, you'd have to be excited if you're a Chiefs fan.
Because you've got a quarterback who's kind of reasonably priced in the market, and you've got the best coach going around. It's funny how it looks like a bargain,
doesn't it, in hindsight?
Mahomes looks like a bargain.
You tie a guy like that. But, Jalen, he had an amazing season last year, and he did great things. But like you say, he had a hell of a lot of horses around him at Philly.
Yeah,
and he was a massive contributor to that side, but they didn't win the Super Bowl. So if we're going to give Aaron Rodgers all that same sort of, well, he didn't win it, so, you know, he's this and he's that, it brings a lot of focus onto the relative abilities of some of these other guys who are getting these. Do you know who probably the best quarterback is amongst all these guys getting these contracts? Probably the guy at the Browns, just for throwing. You know, so what did they pay him? This money going around for quarterbacks, it will eventually tear your franchise apart.
Oh, no doubt.
As well as build it up. I think you've got to find a way like Tom Brady. The reason everyone knows that Tom Brady was the absolute greatest of all time, but he did not corral all the money of the roster into his own pocket.
And even when he was paid, he put money, he took the cut. So if he was paid $36 million 1 year, he would renegotiate it and go down to $28 million. I mean, we all know he's never going to be short of money. But, you know, my respect for Tom Brady, and I'm a Dolphins fan, so, you know, I hated the Pats, and I still do. My respect for Tom Brady over the last few years just kept growing. When you look at all the money he left on the table, the ego of not being the highest paid quarterback, because everyone says Tom Brady's ego is out of control. Well, it's bloody not, because what money back on the contract year after year. He did.
I don't think his ego's out of control.
I think people want to knock him down because he had the, you know, supermodel wife and he had all the rings and all this. But I think Tom Brady is everything you'd ever want in a quarterback.
I think Kyler Murray's been paid substantially more money than Tom Brady. Think about that for a second.
Yeah, it's scary. But, mate, look, the draft yesterday, there was no real surprises for me there. Three quarterbacks taken in the top four. Bryce Young. A lot of the quarterbacks are not very big either, and that was a bit of the knock on some of these guys. But people are saying that he's like Drew Brees, which I'm like, well, I don't know how you can read that. I mean, I suppose they try and do comparisons. CJ Stroud went to the Texans. You know, it's the kind of thing you do as a Texans, because you're not going to pay this guy for 3 or 4 years, and their roster's absolutely stinking it up. Houston also took an edge rusher in Will Anderson Jr. And Anthony Richardson, for the Gators, went to the Colts. And then we had a couple of cornerbacks and stuff like that. So I think the draft, this was ever going to be the draft that blew people away. And this is going to be a sleeper draft, you know, where players that were... I just think there's a lot of edge rushes and everything that people have taken, and it shows what teams need to do or are going to try and do. You have to try and get Mahomes. You have to try and get to these guys. So, yeah.
I very much tend to just sit and wait. I think people giving draft grades and stuff like that's one of those, well, it's just a clickbait thing. It's a bit like making those lists that sucked me in before.
How can you really give grades? How can you give grades? The only way you can really give grades is if you do it where we go, right, in 3 years' time, we're going to go back and grade. And they do that, and I find that really interesting.
That's fine. Interesting because you've got actual facts in front of you.
I would like to see it this, though, which you don't see often. I would like to see the person who's graded the draft and then 3 years later goes back and also looks at their own decisions on that draft. That would be kind of cool. There is one surprise for me, And that was the fact that in the top 12 picks, I think how many, two or three running backs. Now, running backs are not traditionally taken too often in the first round. But
not anymore. You tend to find them in the second and third round.
Yeah. Robinson, though, Bijan Robinson, who went to the Falcons, I have seen a lot of him in college football because I watch a lot of college football. And he was the only running back I had down that would be in the top 20. And he was picked at number 8. He looks like, he does look like that. He will go straight into the Falcons and make a difference straight up. He looks really good. But yeah, we had two running backs.
I'm just having a look through one of those stupid draft grade things, right?
Yeah.
And so this guy, Chad Reuter from the NFL draft analyst, yeah, whatever. His snap grades for all 32 teams. Well, guess what? Arizona, grade A. Atlanta Falcons, A minus. Ravens, A. Buffalo Bills, A minus. Panthers, A. So, well, whatever. Chicago Bears, A. Well, they need an A. The Bears need to actually draft someone who can play. Bengals, A. You're giving everyone an A.
Well, it's quite except funny that he's given all these teams an A. Like, there's some teams like the Dolphins you don't even pick until the second round at 51. So, you know,
one of the strongest performing teams in draft last couple of years, who I think has been building very quietly and very well, is actually Detroit. Now he's given them a C minus. No. I would tend to actually go with their front office over Chad Reuter.
Oh, I totally agree. Has traded picks around. They've really drafted well, and I think Detroit is absolutely on the right path. I totally agree with you. But it's really good to see, mate. Obviously, the football managers and everything, the front office, we've got to call them front office, I apologise. The front offices have really looked at how can we combat the Trevor Lawrences and all the up-and-coming quarterbacks and the existing ones like Mahomes and how do we combat these guys who can run out? And the first round of the draft is dominated really by edge rushers and cornerbacks, and that's how they're combating it. They're going for, you know, our defense has to be better. And so I've really enjoyed that. If you have a look, go and have a look through, mate. There's a lot of edge rushes in that first.
Yeah, I'm seeing that now. And yeah, it's interesting. See the guess what grade in the Dolphins got? They didn't pick anyone, so they graded a C minus.
I suppose to see if they've gone right. We're also including what they did to get out of the draft. In other words, you know, we traded pick 20 in the first round for, you know, a wide receiver. You know what I mean? It'd be interesting if that was included in, and it probably
did. Yeah, they don't forfeit in their 2023 first round pick and after investigation about the league and blah blah.
I've got to be honest, mate. And I'm a Dolphins fan who's pessimistic. I'd have to go an A because our roster is absolutely stacked. 20-odd in the draft, and they have said this is not a wide NFL draft by any. You've got a fair few. We've got who we got there, sorry. Okay, maybe I've gone into the wrong rounds there. Sorry, that's pretty unprofessional. I'll just start again there, mate. I'll get that out. Yeah, so from pick 20-odd onwards, we've got wide receiver. So Jackson Smith-Njigba from Ohio State, Quentin Johnson, Zay Flowers, Jordan Addison. That seemed they went quarterback, wide receivers, bang, 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 bang.
Yeah, and that's to be expected because, you know, a lot of the games played out wide, but that's where you like to, you know, sometimes the rule of thumb is if everyone's doing something, the way to get better in the NFL is to do something else.
Yeah, and I think that's what teams tried to do. I think that's what teams tried to do. Like a lot of defensive minded in this draft, and they have said it's not a deep draft, and fine that you know some of the players didn't stand out at college, but it doesn't always happen until they get to the pros. So you know you're right. Let's have a look in 3 years' time. Second round today. This is where I get really excited about you know. the bargains you can pick up in the second and third round. I think that's where you go for your running back traditionally. And that's, yeah, I'm excited to see. I think we'll pick up running backs. Is what
yeah, the engine room of the engine room of NFL teams is built in the second and third rounds.
Totally agree.
And that's where, like, the Patriots and all have always done a pretty amazing job.
Beyond amazing, really.
If you I'm talking about when they were building up teams back in the day, not now.
Oh no, that's not me. No, I think it's the greatest thing I've ever seen. Pats have always done with second, third, fourth round. And
there's a lot of pressure on Bill this time around because they point the finger at him the same way they've done at Green Bay for a while, which is, oh, you don't get wide receivers. I kind of always couldn't understand that whole Packers not finding or drafting wide receivers when they got what's his name? You know, who went off to the Raiders.
I was about to say Devontae Adams, but...
Devontae Adams, yeah. Just him. Sorry. Apart from him, who'd you get? It's like, what are we talking about? there's plenty of bargains to be found in the second and third round,
and more.
Say, that's the real interest.
And more is that becoming a thing because, and for people who are new to the NFL, where you're picked in the draft determines in your next few years what your contract can be. So if you're picking up a wide receiver or running backs and then you franchise, even if you franchise them, they're on a lower franchise amount. So it's an interesting system how that works. The market.
Let's have a look here at the Packers and the Jets swap 15 and 13 for the Aaron Rodgers trade. And we both took edge rushers.
Yeah. Well, look, I think edge rushers is going to be the next couple of years. How do we get to the Bills quarterbacks, and how do we get to, you know what I mean? How do we get?
Well, it's interesting because Aaron Donald comes straight through the middle.
Yeah,
I sometimes wonder if there's not someone to be found like that ability to actually smash up through the center. I think it's really undervalued.
Well, I do agree, but having a look at the college way of playing and the systems, there hasn't been those players that have been easy to watch. Like, you can go to Alabama's and those big teams, but they have stacked rosters. So we know with guys like Tua, they look better because they're in a system for them, if you know what I mean. And it's the same as the defenses of these big teams. They look fantastic. They can get all these sacks. They go to the pros. They don't have the same players around them, so they don't have the same impact. So well, I'm always wary. Yeah,
that's true. It sort of goes a bit both ways, doesn't it, with that?
Yep.
With the big team stuff. So whether you get someone from the SEC or whatever. But I'm just looking, funnily enough, here at the Packers-Jets pick. They both took edge rushers, and they're both from Iowa.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what Iowa's been doing. But the thing is, as offensive tackles get better and better, those edge rushers, unless they're supreme, you've got to be... You can't just be fast off the edge. You've got to be strong. And in position, those edge rushers. I think that so many edge rushers taken in the first round, I think you're going to be paying overs down the track for these players who may.
Well, so I think with the edge rusher, you know, pretty much they're one of the few positions in the NFL that they seem to be able to have that impact in the first year, straight out of the draft. Whereas you don't really get that so much with. Cornerbacks seem to struggle in their first and second years. You don't really know how they're going. And I think a bit the same with wide receivers too.
Well, right, here's the difference, and you would know this being an expert of the game. The cornerbacks and the wide receivers have to learn the patterns of play. They have to learn the playbook inside out. As an edge rusher, yes, you've got to know the plays, but pretty much you're rushing from the edge. You've got to get around your tackle. You've got to get to the quarterback. It's a far easier game to in my understanding, it seems to be an easier position to automatically understand.
Well, it's finding somebody to defend that edge rush position, I think, is has always been the primary piece after a quarterback.
Yep.
And you have to have somebody, because in any sport, as you know, Paul, but in the NFL, I mean, if you're the reactive guy rather than the proactive guy,
yep,
it's far harder.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that blindside position, that blindside, that tackle, you know, most of the time right-handed, quarterbacks most of the time. So that mate, can you hear me there?
Yeah, yeah, just yeah, it's all good. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. I think my mum's trying to call.
All right.
Bit sorry about that. Hey, Mum, we'll talk about the draft later. But yeah, that left side of the blind side tackle is so vital to the game these days, even more so than it's ever been. So, have you gone?
No, I'm here.
Ah, sorry, mate. It just keeps playing up. I apologise. Very unprofessional at the moment. Yeah, the NFL draft, no real surprises. Hopefully those who follow the game, we didn't do it any disjustice or injustice there. Mate, that's terrible English by me. So, look, let's finish it off with a little bit of football talk, mate, outside.
On the NFL point, and I know I shouldn't pull you back, but I did want to get to it. Like, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it's the fact that it's not the biggest news in the NFL probably shows where things are at with Aaron.
Mate, it was the right thing for the Green Bay Packers. And it is one of those trades, mate, that I do think it is right for both teams. New York Jets have been absolutely irrelevant for decades. I think their biggest highlight has been the Mark Sanchez butt fumble over the past few decades. And this is their chance. They've got a stacked roster. I mean, look, I can't put Aaron Rodgers as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time anymore. And I was a big Aaron Rodgers fan. This is it. He looks relaxed. He looks happy. And I'm a Dolphins fan, so it's hard for me to say. But I hope it does work because the Jets need something. They need some sort of hope. And if Aaron Rodgers plays well this season, who's to say he can't go on and play a few more? Everyone's saying he'll only play one or two. He could play quite – I mean, hey, success changes everyone's mind, doesn't it?
Huh.
Hey, come on, you're a Packers man. I'm a Finns fan. You think I'm going to be stoked if Aaron Rodgers wins a couple Super Bowls at the Jets?
I don't understand why you talked about one. You talked about Lamar Jackson being a one-club player.
Yep. I would have loved Aaron Rodgers. I would have loved Aaron Rodgers to be a one-club player, but we knew the writing was on the wall for the last two or three seasons. So,
the only thing that bothers me is I wish the Packers had done this 2 years ago.
Yeah, agreed. And look, I think you know this. You've left at least a couple Super Bowls on the table.
I'm still reaching down to get the biscuit from my throat from the annual choke we do with Aaron there. So there's no way we put money on the Jets winning the title.
Yeah. The AFC East with the Dolphins with their stacked offense, with the Bills with just, you know, a quarterback that I think could do anything. I just think the AFC East is just really fun. It's a really fun division. Probably one of the most fun divisions in the comp, I think.
My son's just walked in. He's got the Super Bowl 31 wind cheater on.
Jeez, mate, must be cold.
Oh, no, we're just actually thinking about quarterbacks that we like Brett Favre.
Yep, Brett Favre. Well, mate, I've only ever had one quarterback that I've loved at the Dolphins, as you'd know.
Chad Pennington, yeah?
Go the Chad. And he never won a Super Bowl. So there we go.
That's it.
We will just finish off with a bit of football talk. Arsenal, I hate the word choke, actually. You know what? I don't like it. But Arsenal are not finding the line easily at the moment. And it seems to be absolute experience versus that you've got to get over the hurdle. You've got to get that first title, don't you? And Arsenal, I think, are looking in a fair bit of trouble now.
They got fixated on the Manchester City game a good few games out.
Yep.
They actually did the classic. They didn't play one game at a time.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to bite them. But having said that, it's been a while since they played in the Champions League even. So they've had a great season regardless of what happened.
Oh, they have. But if you're a supporter of that club, you're going to be starting to think, oh, God, what could have been? What could have been?
Over yet.
No. And I certainly don't think it is either. But you'd certainly right now. You'd have to be favouring City. I mean, yes, they're 2 points behind, but they have two games in hand. They have Fulham, and Fulham have definitely gone to sleep. They've got Fulham in their next game. Then they've
Fulham season sort of ended when what's his name, the big guy, got suspended.
Mitrovic.
Yeah.
Look, these are their next three games, mate. Fulham, West Ham, Leeds. That's 9 points straight up, and they're two games behind. I can't see them losing. You want to know they're following?
Yeah, go on.
Everton.
Wow.
Mate,
that'll see them out. Have they got five games left, or is it?
City's got seven games left. But they've also got Champions League semi-final as well. So, I mean, that's, you know, they've got a couple extra games. They're going to be playing a lot of games, but they've got the squad.
It's funny, I know Arsenal have got Chelsea and then they've got us.
Well, that's going to be the one. I mean, I think it's City's to lose now.
Yeah, we've got a chance to really end their title dreams, don't we? St. James, last year we beat them 4-1.
Well, look, the top four, it's just the order of the top four between you and United. The top four now looks pretty settled. United blew an absolute chance to seal it, leading Tottenham, who have really lost confidence. They led 2-0 against Tottenham the other morning, and they had Tottenham absolutely on toast and probably should have been 3 or 4 up and away. That's how dominant they were, but you cannot let teams hang around. And, you know, we all say it, my old man always says it, 2-0 is a dangerous lead. And it's true if you don't keep the foot on the pedal.
United are like that, though, aren't they? They really are a skitsy team this year.
Yeah, and you know, people are kind of bagging them out. But in all honesty, they've got a really experienced midfield. And I just don't understand how they lose control so often. But hey, what was beautiful about that game was seeing Bruno Fernandes skip through, you know, one-on-one with the keeper and hit the crossbar. I mean, they would have been 3-1 up and away. Every now and again, a team has a player you can't stand. And that Fernandes, it's just that he whinges so bloody much.
I don't like him. He's a great player. The truth is that, you know how we've been winning by big margins except for your game. When we played Manchester United, they could have got the same score on that Spurs got from us. Don't know what team's turning up at the moment.
No, we thumped you back into form, mate. We woke you up. We woke up the new Giants. I will touch on Villa, if I may.
Go on.
We're a chance to make Europe, which is really exciting. I don't care what level of Europe it is when you haven't played for over a decade. And, you know, after 12 games, we were only a couple points out of relegation.
Your manager's a specialist in that second level comp, isn't he?
He really is. I mean, he's got four Europa League titles, and not with the biggest clubs going round. And the exciting thing for us, this is the first time in Premier League history that a manager has come in and his first 20 games, he scored in every single game. That's a bloody cool record. So
that is a good record.
We've got United on tomorrow night. And
I hope you thump them.
Well, it's a massive chance for Villa because we've got a couple extra days. We've got a couple extra days rest. And, you know, it's a free, honestly, it's one of those games. We're at Old Trafford. It's a free hit. If we can beat United, it's a double. And I don't think we've done the double on United in forever. So it'd be, you know, exciting time for me. I'm looking forward to it. But down near the bottom, mate.
Isn't it exciting to not be involved?
Oh, it's so exciting not to be involved. I mean, seriously, I did it the other day. I was going, oh my gosh, we are 25. We're 21 points off the top, right? So obviously we're way out of it, but we're 25 points off relegation.
Can't get roped back into the fight.
It's so exciting. But these teams just don't want to stay up. I mean, realistically, it's 16th down, right? Southampton, we can say they're gone now. They're on 24 points. But from Everton on 28 up to Leeds on 30, there is 2 points. And the goal difference is getting tighter and tighter now because Leeds are on minus 21. So Leeds, Forest, Leicester, Everton, Southampton. Leeds,
everything Forest. Everything about Everton yesterday's game was dreadful. And
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe how they capitulated in the second half, given what was on the line at their place.
And how scary is it that they've got this massive stadium? It's probably going to be one of the biggest stadiums, if not the biggest, that the Championship has ever seen.
Which takes me to exactly where I started the podcast and my theory. And I've sort of floated with you a bit before. But football teams that they're not happy with their lodgings, right? They don't like their house. And they look down the road and say, we can have a much bigger house with all the new, like, you know, trimmings and latest gimmicks and stuff like that, and have all these corporate suites. 99 times out of 100 that they decide to move and build a new stadium because, you know, we're so much better than the place we've been at forever. The club folds up and literally packs tent and just goes away.
Yeah, it's pretty scary for Everton because if they do go down, quite often you go, right, a team that goes down, they've got a fair few good players, they should bounce back up into the Premier League. But I don't think Everton's squad is that good. And if they go down, they're no guarantee to come straight back up. The Championship.
Pretty sure the stadium alight for Sunderland opened the year before they went down and before they went into the nether regions. And that's a millstone around the club's neck at that point.
Yes.
And Goodison Park is a true theatre of English football. I was watching it last night. I wasn't upset about Everton's position. I was more looking at it going, I still love watching all these old grounds like Highbury and that. And like, no one's happy with anything anymore. And Everton really should have not bought into that new stadium.
Well, we're on a Villa podcast through this network the other night, and we were saying the same thing. Beware the new shiny, because Villa Park is the plans ultimately are for 60,000. In the next few years, it'll be 50,000. So at the moment, it's about 41, 42,000. And that's not a bad thing. They've already got the plans where it's not just the ground, but all around it will be the new gift shops, restaurants, everything like that. So it's a really holistic viewpoint. And that's where things like St. James Park and Villa Park, those kind of places that are part of the culture of that and the tapestry of those cities, that redeveloping those grounds, they actually have the ability to do it. Like if you know Villa Park, there's nothing around it. So they can do whatever they want.
Think about this. I was thinking about it, right? And it's just a couple of places, right? So Derby County.
Yep.
They used to play the baseball, left there. Where are they? Bolton. They get that beautiful new shiny stadium.
Yep.
They're officially finished, really, aren't they?
It's sad.
Arsenal haven't really been relevant a lot of the time since they've been at the Emirates. I mean, when I say not relevant, they haven't been at the level where they were at Highbury.
Yeah.
And the list goes on. Wigan got their new ground. Off you went. Blackburn did get a new ground, but I think that didn't make much difference. They probably did need that. But over and over and over again, you just see it and you go, wow. I just think it's really, really dangerous, especially West Ham. Goodness me. Yeah. That's the most boring place on planet Earth.
We don't want to make this completely Villa and Newcastle centric, but we're so blessed that, you know, there's no chance that, there's definitely no chance from Villa. You'd know more about St. James Park, but we're blessed that we're not in London or we're not, you know, in Liverpool or Manchester where there's not a lot of room around the grounds to redevelop. We've got that ability to if we do, and you certainly will upgrade over the next few years, we've got the ability to do so without fear of moving.
Sunderland, Roker Park, I think you just have to find a way of dealing with whatever your ground is, because you can't build your future thinking, we're never going to be playing Champions League. Hell, maybe Chelsea mightn't even get to do that for a while, you know what I mean?
No, exactly. Well, mate, down the bottom, I'd been reluctant to really pick who would go down. And I didn't really have Leeds in that calculation, but I actually have Leeds as going down with Everton and Southampton. Because if they do not win against Bournemouth tomorrow night, this is who they've got on their run home, okay? They have got City. City will not lose to Leeds. They have got Newcastle. I don't think the blood between Newcastle and Leeds is fantastic. I think Newcastle will put Leeds to the sword. They've got West Ham, who are going to be desperate not to be in the relegation battle. And they finish off with Tottenham, who could very well be playing for a European place. So I think Leeds are down.
I think that that sentiment might be shared by someone we know.
You know what? I don't like Leeds, but I'm not, I said it to you, you know, a long time. I'm not voting for anyone to go down. I'm not going to take glee in anyone going down. We've been there, but I do think they're going down.
Well, there's a chance that two of the biggest clubs in England are going to go down at the same time.
Well, that, you know, and you know what? That's the beauty of the competition. No one has a God-given right to be anywhere.
And if it does happen to Leeds, I could see them coming back up. But like we said about Everton, I think there's so much things that have happened there in the last couple of years that you wouldn't surprise if they, if they've got to try and stop the bleeding next year as well.
I think
Leeds, both teams could go down, honestly, and they've both been flirting with the with it for a couple of years. So
I think you're right. If Leeds go down, I honestly think they'll rebound straight back up. I think their squad is way too good for their championship, but I do not think Everton's is. I definitely do not think Everton's. Having a look at a lot of...
Because you can see Forest crunching their way out of it, you know, like just... hey, I tell you what, you've really only got to win two games by the look of it and you might save yourself.
Well, Forest have had some hard games in recent weeks. So they have... Who have they got coming up? They've got Brentford. But it's at Brentford, which is hard. They've got Southampton at home. I think they'll beat Southampton. They've got Chelsea away. Going to be a tough game. They've got
you could put a circle around that, and they are as long as they keep Frank Lampard in charge, you've got a chance there.
They pick up no points against Arsenal. They won't beat Arsenal. They won't pick up a point. And then they've got a team who's now safe, and who knows what they're going to turn up. Who knows if they're turning up in party mode or can't give a crap mode. They've got Crystal Palace in their final game. And you just never know, do you? I mean, Crystal Palace is safe. I mean, they're 8 points clear.
If I'm Forest, you know, if I'm Forest, seriously, I fancy my chances because you look at that draw and you can see a way with, you know, at least three of those games. And we know what it's like sitting on the bottom, what you have to do, what you've got to be realistic with. And, you know, their manager seems to be fully invested in the place. So, you know, like, we'll see what happens.
Well, I'll tell you what, mate. It's not fate sealed, but Tuesday morning's game is unbelievable. It's Leicester taking on Everton. I mean, Everton lose that. And if Everton lose that, and look, it's that, you know, it's at Leicester, and Leicester can play football.
They've got some big-time players, man. They've got some excellent players.
If Leicester win that, they actually go 4 points clear of Everton with four games to go.
That's so crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if Leicester win on Tuesday, I think that's Everton relegated. I really do.
And then you're just waiting for Leeds to fill the last spot out of it, Leeds and Forest.
I think it's Leeds and Forest. I think Leicester will get out of it. Their goal difference as well for Leicester is minus 13. So none of the teams around them are going to catch that. Leeds have got an 8-goal difference, worse than Leicester. So I think Leicester, if they beat Everton on Tuesday, and they will, I honestly believe they will, then I think that's Everton relegated, mate. And it's up to Leeds, Forest and Leicester. And I think it'll be Leeds and Forest. Scary. And as I said to you, mate, I don't take any... I actually don't take any pleasure in whoever gets relegated. I really don't. And everyone knows I don't like Leeds, but I won't take pleasure out of them getting relegated.
No, I don't want to see Leeds get relegated. Because you know exactly how horrible it feels.
Yeah.
But that's the game, and three teams have got to go down, and one of them coming back up. Come back up. It's interesting to know.
One final thing. And I know you're not an NBA fan, but I'm going to say it anyway. You've got to watch the press conference at some stage of Giannis I'm not even going to say it. I'll just say Giannis.
I do know he plays for Milwaukee, yeah?
He does. And Giannis's press conference when he, you know, compares their loss, you know, to the amount of times that Jordan didn't progress in the finals. And he's saying, well, was that a failure? Some of those seasons were a failure the Bulls because they were expected to go through, right?
Mm.
And he's like, this is not a failure. Dude, you're the number one seed. You won a championship 3 years ago. Your team's regressing. You're not progressing. You got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs and you were insipid and could not make a shot. And I love Giannis. And you were coming up against a team full of injuries and second string players, four of who were never drafted in the NBA. Dude, it is the very definition of failure, Giannis. You can be angry to a reporter all you want and you can come out with some bullshit philosophies. You were the number one seed up against a team that had so many undrafted players and injuries. And if I put their starting, in the last 5 minutes, John, if I put out the lineup of Milwaukee and you compared it to a relative no-namers, sorry, Giannis, definition of failure. Don't come out with crap that it wasn't a failed. But you're the number one seed and you're knocked out in the first round of the NBA playoffs. That is a bloody failure. Own it. End of. There you go, mate. A little bit of an NBA rant for you.
Fair enough.
Mate, it's been a great podcast. It is the Love Sport podcast. You can get us through Facebook and Twitter. You can get me at Paul_football. You can get John at Lambic Peach when he chooses, because he's a very discerning social media man. Any final words there, mate? We've covered AFL, NBA, NFL, NRL, the world game. Anything else you want to cover there?
Oh, you've got your work cut out for editing, and I hope you don't spend too long doing it, Paul, because congratulations to you and your beautiful wife, Megan, on your marriage last week, and it was a wonderful day to be there with you and your family, and I hope you've had a great week, and I'm sure you're still walking on air.
I really appreciate that. I think having a happy relationship in whatever format it is, for me, Meg and I have been really happy for a number of years, but the marriage and having really close friends and family there is just absolute honey on my crumpets, mate. Honey on my crumpets.
We'll go and have some before Stewie knocks on the door, mate.
Stewie and I, a couple of pies for morning tea, mate. Have a lovely day with your beautiful family as well. And good luck with the Lions today. I think it'll be about 8 to 10 goals. So I think the breeze will be a bit tricky. Otherwise, I'd give you a bit more.
Yeah, I'm going to spend the next hour brushing up on what actually happened in the draft because I totally forgot it was on, so you probably could tell.
Mate, there'll be no surprises in the draft for you. It was pretty much what everyone thought would happen. So it was actually the most anti-climatic first round of an NFL draft I've ever seen. So go and catch up on it.
I did say thought it was next Thursday.
Thanks for joining us for another Love Sport podcast. Hope that got your weekend off to a good start. It was Paul and John. Get me at Paul_football, John at Lambic Peach. We are covering sport every week, so if you want to join us, get us on the Love Sport podcast on Facebook and Twitter as well. You can also join our Love Sport podcast group. Hey, if you want to, completely up to you. If you're playing sport, as we said, you definitely need some dirty boots.